97.5, The Fanatic.
Ready?
I was born ready.
I can honestly say that's the best news I've heard all day.
Joe Torti Show.
Kind of reminded me of a dark, gothic Neil Diamond.
That's like exactly what I'm going for.
This is the Joe Torti Show.
What show are you listening to?
Joe Torti Show.
I'm trying to be patient, but you're making it incredibly difficult.
I can say big loud things. I can be demonstrative.
Can we just end this already?
Now it's time. The Joe Torti Show.
Yes, it is. What's going on, Philadelphia? Joe Torti here with you, 97.5. The Fanatic, Josh Rabick producing. Devon Givens just exiting the studio. Outstanding job by Devon Givens. As per usual, that's the normal standard for D. You guys are used to that. So we're going to continue on the phones as we continue to get your most disappointing Philadelphia sports moments and also your list of three as you put on your GM cap, face the world, and explain the things that you got wrong. A lot of really good ones so far. We'll go to Ben in Philly next on 97.5, The Fanatic. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Joe. Hey, Joe, how's it going? I just missed out on getting to tell Devon that I couldn't agree more about Chris Webber.
Oh, he's still listening. D, you hear that?
Oh, good.
No, Chris. Yeah, he's giving you the thumbs up.
I can't tell you how many times I've watched a replay of an NBA game, and I feel like I see exactly what happened, and then Chris Webber says the opposite.
Oh, it's amazing. It makes you wonder. I bet the first couple times you're like, do I know what I'm watching? And then by the end, you're like, oh, okay, never mind. I feel good about this, you know?
Well, with Chris Webber, you just have to give up sometimes.
Exactly. That's exactly right. What's your disappointing moment, Ben?
Right. So, for me, maybe not most disappointing, but growing up being spoiled with Eagles cornerbacks, Troy Vincent, Bobby Taylor, Sheldon Brown, Lito Shepard, both the signings, both Nnamdi and Byron Maxwell were big disappointments for me.
So did you anticipate that they would be good, or was it more of like just being hopeful and then it didn't work out?
Well, we had been pretty weak at corner after Lito and Sheldon Brown were gone. And so we'd been so weak, and we'd been waiting for somebody that could shut down some of the big receivers that were in the NFC East. There was Dez Bryant. There was Plexico Burress for the Giants for a little while. And, you know, they would tear us apart every once in a while.
Yep.
And we've been looking for somebody to shut them down, and those guys both just did not work out.
Yeah, it was a big-time bummer, Ben. Hey, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. Really was. Both of those guys, because, as a matter of fact, we thought of the Byron Maxwell signing as, like, the kind of whiteout for the Nnamdi Asamoah deal. You know, like, we'll just scratch that out. Like, that never happened. And now we're going to correct it here by landing the guy that, you know, is eventually going to stabilize things. And instead, you know, yeah, Byron Maxwell is a free agent, but one, Seattle lets him get away. Two, he's playing opposite Richard Sherman and in front of Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. It's like, yeah, maybe we should have seen that this wasn't going to work out. Nnamdi Asamoah is a fascinating case, too, because he did have one really good season. One really, really good season. But teams didn't test. Like, we see corners all the time have big-time, like, 7-8 interception seasons when teams think that they stink, they get thrown at, and then they get picked off 8 times in a season, right? Like, we've seen that happen. But a lot of times with corner play, you see it drop off the very next year as the corners get figured out or their tendencies or whatever, right? With Nnamdi Asamoah, Oakland was so bad in the secondary at the time that nobody even bothered. Nobody even cared to test whether Nnamdi Asamoah was actually any good or not. They were just like, yeah, well, you know what? He had that good year. He might be good. We know these other guys stink, so we're going to throw at these other guys. And that's kind of the way that it went. That's how Asamoah had that shutdown reputation, and that's how the Eagles, along with a lot of other teams, because he was going to get paid no matter what, got duped into thinking that Nnamdi Asamoah was a number one guy, a shutdown corner. And that hurts. That hurts because they sunk money into it. It hurts because you didn't see the end of the contract. It hurts for a lot of reasons. Really, really disappointing. Especially because as a Philly fan, the gut reaction was to be excited that your team understood what a need was, a weakness was, and go and get the best available option, the number one guy that you could possibly get. It just didn't work out. Were you in on Nnamdi Asamoah, Josh Rabik? Were you in on that signing when it happened?
I was in on Nnamdi Asamoah at the time because so many of us were, because we didn't realize completely what we were getting, because we weren't watching Raiders games at that time. The Raiders stunk. But the Byron Maxwell one is the one that stings even worse, because it's like making the same mistake again. It, obviously, he wasn't quite as highly touted as Nnamdi was, but I think that's what makes it worse, because you already made the mistake.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Trying to correct it, you go down that same path. Pretty rough. 610-632-0975. We do have a couple of open phone lines as we're talking about your greatest disappointing moment here as a Philadelphia fan. We've gotten a lot of them. For the record, mine was Andrew Bynum. By the way, I saw this on the ESPN ticker. The Clippers are beaten up on Miami all of a sudden. Miami was winning, and now it's 101-87 Clippers. Kawhi Leonard has his first career triple-double. I saw that. I was like, what? Devon Givens says, yeah. I mean, he doesn't pass the ball that much. I'm like, okay, there you go. Makes sense. But Kawhi with a triple-double. He has 24, 10, and 10 through three quarters. After 613 games, that is a career triple-double number one. Congratulations to Kawhi. Let's go to Dan Westchester next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Good, thanks. A couple of people come to mind. Some of the really bad draft picks they had. One was Danny Watkins. Remember the lineman they picked?
Of course.
Back in the day. And, you know, and he was 24 years old. And he wasn't even a first-round all-conference player in his own, you know, conference. You know, like a second or third player. They picked him a couple years later, and then he goes firefighting. That was a bust. And then one of the guys they with, I think was Jason Witten. They had a 13th draft pick back in the day, and he was the best tight end coming out of Tennessee, and they went with a guy from Rutgers because, you know, he was a little more athletic, but, you know, you could have had Witten for 15 years.
Right. Yep. That's so definitely true.
There are a couple. And I don't know if I can talk about Ben a little bit.
Sure, let it rip.
I think that, you know, he is what he is. He's not going to change. Lepers don't change his spot. You know, when I coach kids and I say, hey, when you dribble up the court, as soon as you catch a ball, look up, take one dribble, pass it up. 10 years later, I see him playing in high school. They still take two dribbles before they look up to pass it.
Mm.
And, you know, who was the leading scorer in all-time basketball? Kareem Jabbar, right?
Yes.
He had the skyhook. I don't remember any of him taking jump shots. He didn't need to. That wasn't his game. You know, so, you know, he scored more points than anybody. And Magic Johnson's another one who just took standstill shots. He wasn't a jump shooter either. So, I mean, people compare Magic to Ben a little bit. He's kind of like that. And that's his game. We can only have to talk about all these weaknesses. Look at all the positive things he does. And it just gets annoying because we're going to be talking about this for 5 years now because he's not going to change, in my opinion.
Well, I don't really think so either, Dan. And thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate it. And I've been talking about this where I think that you saw how effective he can be even without a perimeter jump shot. The objective should be, how do you capture that more often? How do you get him being aggressive and being confident going to the free throw line? How do you ensure that he's knocking down free throws? Like, those are the things, those are the areas where Simmons can be the most effective. By the way, I think, and I just confirmed, Danny Watkins, 26 years old when he was drafted in the first round, was not 24 years old. So, I mean, you would think that a guy would be even more developed and more ready to go if you're 26 years old. But
he's already 35 years old now.
It's crazy, isn't it? Man, oh, man. So, what happened here? Oh, he was honored as the Rookie of the Year in 2015 from the Frisco Firefighter EMT Department. He's a 2015 Rookie of the Year, not the NFL Rookie of the Year, obviously, because you would have remembered that with Danny Watkins. The tough part about the Danny Watkins draft And this is why I go back and forth about that draft and the 2017 draft, because I've had a running debate with several producers at the station. And Josh, I think that you've been involved in this debate, that I really hate the 2017 draft for the Eagles because of all of the other players that you could have gotten. The other side of the coin is that even though the Danny Watkins draft wasn't great, you still got nothing out of it. Like, that whole draft was really, really terrible. And it's when you start off with a 26-year-old offensive lineman, firefighter person, no wonder that kind of goes sideways on you. The 2011 NFL draft was pretty brutal for the Eagles. Let's pull it up, shall we? Nice little painful walk down memory lane. Danny Watkins in the first round, second round, Jaquan Jarrett, third round, Curtis Marsh, fourth round, Casey Matthews, fourth round, Alex Henry, fifth round, Deion Lewis, fifth round, Julian Vandevelde. Let's see. Oh, Jason Kelsey in the sixth round. That works. Brian Roll in the sixth round. Greg Lloyd in the seventh round. And Stanley Havili in the seventh round. So that is one Jason Kelsey out of 11 Eagles draft picks. It's not good, as my friend Ilya Brizgalov would like to say. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. Tweets continue to come in. Namdi's an actor now? Is that true? Paul Arch is tweeting in that he's in Crown Heights. Is that true? Do we have confirmation of that? I have no idea whether that would actually be an interesting movie to watch. But, I didn't even know that it was a movie, to be completely honest with you. It got torched by Metacritic, which doesn't mean anything.
Yes, he was in it.
Namdi Asma produced it. So, oh my goodness, must have been in it too. Did $238,000 at the box office. 2017, how did I miss this movie with Namdi Asamoah in it? That's good knowledge by Paul. Does Namdi officially get an IMDb page now for this? I'd assume that he does.
He has to. It has a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes.
He's been an actor in 11 movies now? What happened? Anything that I've heard of or seen? Huh. All right. Some of them are TV series, so that I'll be forgiven for not having seen that. But all right, it's good to know. Josh, when you put together your all I was wrong team, refresh it for the people, because I'm going to share mine once again.
Yeah, I went Kellen Winslow Jr., obviously very famous dad, decorated college career. It felt like nobody could cover him at the college level. You'd be watching the game, and it was clear who the X factor on the field was. So
sure.
High expectations for him. I got to tell you, Gavin Floyd was a guy who really stood out. I know baseball prospects, a lot of them get a super high amount of hype. You trade him away during the trade deadline, and then you never hear from him again. He felt different. He felt like he was going to be the ace of the future.
Right.
And then let's go with someone more established, Peter Forsberg. You have the 2004-2005 lockout, and then that's when the Flyers add Forsberg, Hatcher, and Rathje. Forsberg obviously leading that class coming on in. He's tied to Eric Lindros. He was known as one of the best playmakers of that time period. And it's a shame he ran into those foot and ankle injuries at the point where he's looking for skates that are custom made for him, because he really didn't get much after that year, and you end up sending him over to Nashville for what ended up being a king's ransom, though.
Yeah, it did end up being that way. But you're right. If you ever played any of the NHL video games during that era, Peter Forsberg was like kind of an unknown entity, because he was never really playing for Colorado. But you were like, who's this guy who's rated higher than Joe Sakic? You know, like that was the thing. It was like you never really saw him when you turned on the TV, because he was always banged up and hurt and working his way back from this or that or the other thing. He's rated higher than Joe Sakic. That's a big what could have been.
You knew who Joe Sakic was, and then you also knew who Steve Yzerman was in Detroit, and if someone was rated higher than him, then you knew you wanted him.
This is a real dude. That's exactly right. It's a shame that that didn't work out for either. John Rooney tweets in that Crown Heights is a good movie, so maybe I should check that out. All right. I'm always open for movie recommendations. John also tweeted in earlier, Philly fans legit hate McNabb now. That's unfair. We got our Super Bowl. Let it go. Those wounds should be healed. I agree with all of this, by the way. The hate for McNabb's out of control. Why not hate T.O.? He caused the distractions and went to the Cowboys. Okay. I was mega pro T.O. in the disagreement, in the debate, right? Because I think that, you know, no pun intended, you do have a leg to stand on when you break your leg, come all the way back, all that kind of stuff, and then the Super Bowl plays out the way that the Super Bowl plays out. Is it childish? Yeah. But you do have the right to complain a little bit if you're T.O. in that situation. My problem is that it was not squashed, that it wrecked the team, and then, more to the point, that it's continued to fester until the present day. They talked about it 2 days ago. Just can't quit something that happened 15 years ago. It's crazy. Philly West tells me that his wife is actress Kerry Washington knew this. I did know that Namdi was married to Kerry Washington. But I appreciate you keeping me honest because most of the time, I've got no idea on that kind of stuff. J. Fox Photos. Crown Heights was a very good movie. Namdi did a very good job acting as well. That's like three positive reviews that I've seen just since I've mentioned the movie of Namdi's work in Crown Heights. Check it out. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter as the people are doing at Joe Torti and at 97.5 The Fanatic. Also, we've got to get to some of the other more disappointing things that we have seen in Philadelphia sports. You have a lot to choose from. I've heard just a full-on list of tragedies that have gone on here in Philadelphia in terms of Philadelphia sports that have not worked out the way that we hoped. And then, of course, just personally, as the GM, we're taking your confessions. Who were you wrong on in terms of somebody being way better than you thought or way worse than you thought? We've seen them kind of go either way. I'll share mine on the other side for those who missed it. 610-632-0975. It's Joe Torti. Josh Rabick's producing. We're hanging out until midnight right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Josh Rabick producing as we hang out together until midnight. Want to remind you, of course, that even though the holiday gift-giving season is over, the Fanatic Pro Shop is open for business. Now that you're finished buying gifts for everyone else, it's time to buy something for you. Quality Fanatic and Philadelphia sports-themed merchandise and apparel at discount prices. The Fanatic Pro Shop can be found at 975thefanatic.com. Okay, players that I was wrong about, just keeping it Philly because I had a national list that was a little bit different. But just keeping it Philly, LJ Smith was mine, what I would call the bust out one. Because holy smokes, LJ Smith, you know, look, coming in was a wide receiver playing the tight end position. And you talk about having an X factor on the team, and it's a lot of the same reasons that Josh was talking about with Kellen Winslow Jr. When you have a playmaker at the tight end position, well, look at the Super Bowl. The top two tight ends in the league are in the Super Bowl right now. Like, it's, you know, it does provide you an edge. when you're spending a lot of resources towards acquiring and defending wide receivers, right? So L.J. Smith comes in, doesn't help out. That was number one. I also had Larry Hughes, who I was not disappointed that the Sixers ended up with in the draft. I thought that that was a potential dynamic backcourt that with him and Allen Iverson that could have worked out just fine. Obviously, it did not play out that way. And then Pedro Martinez, by the time that he got to Philadelphia, I thought that he had nothing left to give you. I thought that he was the, you know, kind of at the very end of his career, had nothing left. And in the postseason, he came out and showed out for you. Pedro Martinez did really, really well. That's one that I was pleased to be wrong about. And then, of course, talking about our greatest disappointments. You got so many to choose from. I think we've spent the last 2.5 hours kind of laying out, in a lot of ways, why I'm not a huge fan of the process and the tanking way that the rebuild was done. Not a big fan of it. But the catalyst for it was the fact that, you know, you go out, you lose in the playoffs, acquire Andrew Bynum, and then Andrew Bynum never plays for you, and you give up pieces of your team for a guy that literally is never going to suit up for you. That is my biggest disappointing moment, because that moment could have changed so much of the way that the Sixers' history has been written, at least to date. Maybe there's a happy ending at the end of this season, but with the information that we have, and the season results being in the books, this is kind of what we're looking at. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. And Josh tweets out from the Fanatic account, in honor of the McNabb and T.O. beef, what are your greatest Philadelphia sports disappointments over the years? And the reason the disappointments is utilized here is because our own Brian Westbrook was talking about how disappointed he was in himself, that he was never able to rectify that beef. He was never able to square it up with the two men and save what could have been, you know, you don't call it a dynasty till you win a Super Bowl, but it could have been a very effective team in the NFC for years on end. Leo Londoño tweets in, last game at the Link. Yeah, that's a disappointment. Blaine Bishop and Rondae Barber and like that whole situation. Yep. Yep. That one really hurts. Awesome Wah says B Sixers 24/7. Yep. On board with you there. Nationally, one of you mentioned USC Mike Williams. That was me. How about the other player who sued the NFL with him? If memory serves, Ohio State's Maurice Claret. Yes, Claret exploded onto the scene with Ohio State as a freshman, a national champion, et cetera, et cetera. And then kind of went with Williams on the campaign to say that if you were a sophomore, you should be allowed to enter the NFL draft. And as a result, both of those guys kind of got stuck in limbo and had to effectively sit out a year because they were ruled ineligible from returning to their college teams as well as they awaited the NFL draft. And neither of their careers went anywhere.
It's a shame the XFL wasn't around at that time. The XFL we're looking at now.
Yeah, it would have been big. Yeah, you take a year, you're playing there, you're in game shape. NFL teams have more tape on you playing against professional players. There you go. Jasper Lucas tweets in, what I hated most about Byron Maxwell was not only did he stink, but he would always have that stupid grin on his face after he'd given up yet another X play and when he was questioned about it after the game. You know, you do wonder, and I never want to impugn someone's motive, so I'm just purely speculating. I'm not saying this that I have any information about Byron Maxwell this way or not. But you do wonder sometimes when these guys net the big free agent contracts, they're like, all right, I already did the work. You know what I mean? Like, I already did what I was supposed to do to secure the contract. and now we're just kind of cruising. Maybe Byron Maxwell was comforted by his signing bonus after every one of those X plays that happened. Phillies 616 tweets in, Game 5, 2011 NLDS. Oh, man. That one hurts. Cardinals beat the Phillies, and that was Roy Halladay taking the loss 1-0. Chris Carpenter there. Like that, if you're a Phillies fan, there are very few games more painful than that one. Because that was at the effectively the height of the four aces era. Halladay picks up the win in game one. Cliff Lee loses game two. Hamels comes back game three and wins. Oswalt loses to Edwin Jackson in game four. And then you've got best on best, effectively, with Carpenter going against Halladay. And you lose 1-0 in a pitcher's duel. Absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal. So if you're a Phillies fan, sorry to bring that one back up for you. 610-632-0975. We got Ilya Brizgalov here. The universe is humongous big. Yeah, Briz, so is your five hole. That's a good tweet from Chuck Heineman. Good stuff. Mike Smith tweets in, all those picks from the process years. And this is what Devon and I were talking about. Yes, we have Ben and Joe. Chances are they would have had them regardless. There's a good chance that you would have had them regardless. But with the picks in the cap room, the Sixers gathered all those years, there should be more to show for it. That's what we're saying. Like, you don't... Here's my problem. In Philadelphia, we are smart basketball fans. I believe that. And there's a contingent that says you got to sell Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons to some team for a bag of balls and stuff like that. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the vast majority of basketball fans here in the city are pretty top-notch in terms of intelligence. You should not have to talk yourself into Tobias Harris as a max-level player. You should not have to talk yourself into the Sixers as a big-time contending team. I know that we want them to succeed, but if you're honest with yourself, going through the entire tanking process, not only seeing what other teams have done, but seeing what other players came out during those years, naturally, you should expect to have more if you're the Sixers. If you're going to be the poster child of the tanking years and you're not even positive that you got the best players from those drafts, then something went wrong. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that it's never going to work out. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have done it. I'm not saying any of that. What I'm saying is if you're going to be the poster child for the tanking era of the NBA, and you're not sure that you ended up with the best players from it, or at least, you know, the best player for sure, then who knows if it was a good idea or not. This is coming from somebody who likes Joel Embiid a lot. Final goal of the 2010 Stanley Cup Finals, says Eric 67071316. Man, that was the first time, by the way, and I put the Philadelphia-ness aside, but I'm sure that it didn't help. That was the first time, hockey is my favorite sport to play, I was like, this game's kind of stupid a little bit. And the only reason I said that, it's such a small, petty thing. I was like, Patrick Kane scored and nobody knew because the net hid the puck so well. And it was just such like a little innocuous shot, you know, kind of looked like he was going to loop around and instead put a shot on goal and it squeaked in. And nobody knew except for the fact that Patrick Kane was celebrating. Goalie didn't know. Flyers didn't know. That was the first time where I was like, there needs to be something more in Philly.
Leighton 100% knew. He had that look of, oh no, and he froze. Stayed frozen.
He froze. Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. 610-632-0975, your phone number. We got a lot of tweets. We've got a ton of tweets that we've got to get to here, so we'll continue to roll through those. But we do have wide open phone lines if you want to climb aboard. Feel free, 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Fanatic.
Joe Torti Show, 97.5, The Fanatic. Man, you think Philadelphia sports have been through some tough times? You know? I think we did like, oh yeah, what are your greatest memories, even from like the Super Bowl season and stuff? And people are like, I don't know, winning it was fun. Like, you know. Meanwhile, you're like, share with me your pain. Tell me your disappointments and things like that. And boom! Phone lines light up. Got a lot of activity on Twitter, Josh Rabick.
The topic's essentially, do you remember the last time you cried?
That's what it is, pretty much. Got a lot of good stuff on the tweets. I want to make sure we get to those and also to our callers. We'll start off with Eric in Philly on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, Eric?
Hello, I'm on.
You're on, man.
Yeah, I was thinking about the when Cliff Lee, he left the first time.
Yes.
Because we just got the other pitch. I remember
Howden.
His name.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking we're set. And then all of a sudden he's gone. And another thing. Him, Cliff Lee, and T.O., right?
Yep.
When they were here the first time, I'm thinking that was the peak of their careers. They were totally happy. Them years they were here.
Yeah. Especially Cliff Lee and T.O. Like, you got the impression that those guys in particular, for sure.
They were totally happy. T.O., he's like, was an athletic specimen. If you see him with his shirt off during that year.
Oh, how could you not? He's in his driveway. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about before
I'm just
that
kidding. Day, yeah, of course, Eric.
I remember they did an interview on him, and they said, they asked him, who would you like to now you're in Philly, I bet you want a cheesesteak. His whole face changed. He said, that would mess my whole system up.
Yeah, man. He took over for me, and I don't want to speak for you, Eric. The best guy who I'd ever seen going over the middle was Michael Irvin until I saw T.O. T.O. was the best guy going over the middle that I'd ever seen.
Against anybody.
Yeah.
That year. But then when he left, he dropped off a little bit. So did Cliff Lee, even though they brought him back.
Right.
And the other pitcher, who was his, he won the World Series with us.
Cole Hamels?
That year, he fell off.
Yeah, a little bit. He did.
Yeah, and he fell off. He wasn't, right after the World Series, he fell off.
Yeah.
That was a good year. That messed up the whole team.
Yeah.
Oh, I got one more thing.
Let it rip, man.
Andy Reid. Now, I used to have a thing about him. Then one day, he was on an interview. He does his interviews, not no emotional, nothing like that.
Sure.
And he did one interview where the other coach had died. I think the defense coach?
Jim Johnson, yes.
Yeah. His whole demeanor changed. I mean, after I seen that interview, that's there he is, the real Andy. Because he went on and on a little bit, and he said, oh. That was my friend, and this, that, and the other. You seen a side I've never seen of him before.
Yeah,
and
Eric, you know what? When it comes to Andy, I think, and thanks for the phone call. I think that we've seen more and more people say the better that you know him, the better of a guy he is. And I mean, obviously, it's well documented all of the things that he's been through from a family perspective and stuff like that. But you do get the impression that he is a guy who. If he wore his emotions on his sleeve, you'd be hearing about a lot of stuff all the time. So certainly a guy that you could think of. And his career here, definitely unfinished business is the way that I would think that you'd look at it. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Let's go to, is it Shukri in Boston? Next on 97.5, The Fanatic. What's going on, Shukri?
Hey, good evening. Yes, it is indeed. How's it going, my man?
Doing great, man. Sorry if I butchered your name. My bad.
No worries. No offense at all. I mentioned to the producer when I called in that the first one that came to mind was, I don't know, I wasn't sure if you had thought about this yet, but Game 6 of the 1993 World Series.
Had not mentioned it yet. It's a great one.
If it hasn't been mentioned, I'm actually stunned that hasn't been talked about because, one, the Phillies in 93, that team, if you want to talk about one of the single sports teams that truly represented Philadelphia and its personality, it didn't shock anybody that in that 1993 Philadelphia Phillies team that won the pennant. Now, the Phillies, they were up going into the bottom of the ninth in Game 6, especially with the close of Mitch Williams.
Mitch Williams, yep.
On the mound, and obviously we all remember what happened with him surrendering the World Series winning home run to Joe Carter, and so forth. So that moment, it's got to be one of the true heartbreaking moments in Philadelphia sports. But there was another one, just a quick honorary moment that I want to mention.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you mentioned there was a veteran in a tweet, but Game 6 of the 2010 Stanley Cup Finals against the Blackhawks is one that, in terms of recent memory, comes to mind. And the reason why I mentioned that also was because that whole series was just so it was so back and forth, and considering that this was the same Flyers team that obviously came back from 3-0 down against the Bruins in the semifinals and then upset Montreal in the Eastern Finals that year. So I have to go with the fact that series in a cup winning goal that was scored so fast by Patrick Kane, who at that time etched his name in Stanley Cup final lore, but ended up becoming one of the all-time great players. So I had to go with those two mentioned.
Really, really good stuff, Shukri. Thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. I cannot believe that we didn't get more 93 Phillies. I'm truly shocked by that because they are a team that even today people identify with. People adopted that team, John Kruk and Mitch Williams and everybody else, right? Like, that was the team that really did embody Philadelphia. The underdog, nobody expected him to do anything.
What's the term that we always talk about with Philadelphia? Blue collar.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's exactly why people identified with that. And on top of it, it pretty much led to the plot of Big Daddy.
Is that true? I never saw a Big Daddy.
Oh, you never saw Big Daddy?
No, yeah. No.
Okay,
Adam
well,
Sandler.
Yes. Well, and John Stewart. Yeah.
Well,
let's just say there was a moment in Toronto that led to John Stewart and a nice lady, and there came along Julian or Frankenstein, and there we are.
And the rest is history.
Yes, which was led off of that Joe Carter home run.
So the Phillies gave us a movie that lots of people think is great and that I haven't seen. How about that? Yeah, 2009, Josh points out, and this is obviously correct, Cole Hamels really had trouble locating the curveball in 2009. I don't know if it was being overused in 08. I don't know if it was regression to the mean and he hadn't actually taken that next big step yet or what it was. But in 2009... yeah, the hook was really not there. Let's go to Jerry next in North Philly on 97.5, The Fanatic. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, what's up, my brother? How y'all doing?
Doing okay. How are you?
Good. Well, I was just going to say that I think my three disappointments,
yes,
would have to be Andrew Bynum. That
yeah,
was
it's
bad.
A big one for me.
Andrew Bynum, Dario Saric, because I was so drunk the night they drafted him, and I said they drafted the next Tony Kukoc. This dude's going to be amazing.
I only remember because I drink.
Yeah, I drink a lot, apparently.
I gotcha. Well, he ended up being pretty good here. Not Tony Kukoc, but he's pretty good here.
Yeah, but he could have been more. And then, like, my third one, and it's still early, But I really think it's going to be one of those things down the line that's going to be Ben Simmons for me. And as much as I love Ben Simmons, I just don't think that – I just think that he's okay where he's at in life. And he's just like, I'm going to be this guy the rest of my career, and that's it. I don't think that there's – he's a horrible player, and I don't think that he's a superstar, but he's like middle of the road. And I think that he's not going to get to that level that we want him to as a fan base, and as coaching comes, no matter what coach you put in there, he's still going to be who he is.
So let me ask you this, Jerry. Is it disappointing because he's not going to give you enough, or is it disappointing because he's got so much more to give you and doesn't?
I think it's disappointing because he's got so much more to give, but he just doesn't want to. I think he's more focused on the lifestyle of being a basketball player than actually being an amazing basketball player.
Gotcha. What do you have on T.O. and McNabb?
T.O. and McNabb, biggest disappointment ever. They both, the McNabb player hated on T.O. That's honestly what it was. Nobody wants to say it, but McNabb hated T.O. because T.O. was the one that everybody loved around here. The dude scored 15 touchdowns. How do you not go to bat for a guy that scored you 15 touchdowns, you dummy? It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. And now he's a drunk and he's crazy. He's playing pool. He's going insane. And, McNabb, I mean, as great as he was, this is always what every Philly fan remember him for. Hands on his hips, smiling and looking to the sky after throwing an interception to end season. That's what he always did.
And
pissed us off at nauseam.
Yeah, it doesn't play here. Jared does not play here, as you know. Thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. And that is a problem. And that does not play here all that well. 610-632-0975. It's your phone number to join the conversation. This is the Joe Torti Show. More of your tweets next. We do have wide open phone lines. Your biggest sports disappointment and the three guys that you were big time wrong on. Final hours coming up next on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Hello. 11 o'clock hour, 97.5 The Fanatic. Joe Torti Show. Josh Rabick is producing. Hanging out until midnight here, so an hour to go. Before we get back to the phones, Mick and Bill are waiting. John tweets in at Rune3113. I always thought that Cole Hamels was the reason we won in 08 and probably the reason we lost in 09. He was 11-14 or something with a 4-something ERA, and he wasn't good in the World Series. That's true. The reason that that stings is because Yankees destroyer Cliff Lee was doing damage in the World Series. That's why it stings so badly. If you had two of those guys going in the World Series, then who knows what happens. And the Yankees in 09 were so clearly the best team that beating that team would have been big time in terms of laying the groundwork for your stuff. Halladay v. Carpenter continuing to get more votes. Fly Eagles Fly went full on after it. GM overvalued was Ron Hextall. That's probably true. Players overvalued, Byron Maxwell, Andrew Bynum. Definitely true. But what's that look on your face? You a big GM Ron Hextall fan?
Well, hold on a second here. It's hockey. You can't judge everything with him right now because look at what this roster is and how many of these players he drafted.
It's true.
It's almost like Ed Wade because baseball and hockey, it takes so long for these guys to eventually develop that Ed Wade was gone for a few years by the time some of these major pieces that
and
he drafted.
The team.
Well, exactly. And if the Flyers with the pieces that we see now, the young core, we're going to look back and say, thanks a lot, Ron Hextall, for putting this together.
So we'll put a pin in that one for Fly Eagles Fly. Greatest disappointment, the process. Andy Reid conference championship losses, team performance. Prospect miss is Mostert. I'm giving the Eagles a pass on Mostert. had him early on. It's everybody else who's got a problem, I think. And then not re-signing T.O. or getting McNabb a top receiver, losing Reggie White, acquisition fails. Really went for it. That is a complete homework assignment there. Mick in Harrisburg is next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, Mick?
Hey, how's it going, Joe, man? Love the show.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Not a problem. But my biggest disappointment, I'm a little bit older, was Randall Cunningham when he blew his knee out, man. I was a kid when that happened, but oh, my goodness. You couldn't tell me that was the worst thing that ever happened.
You talk about the sky being a limit for a player. I mean, Randall could do everything.
Yeah, and that was supposed to be the Eagles' year, you know. And, you know, for that to happen, you know, the floor just fell out.
Yeah, man, I hear that. It's brutal.
And if I could get a player or two that I was definitely wrong about.
Yeah.
Corey Simon, man. I thought Corey Simon was just going to be I thought he was going to be Fletcher Cox.
Well, yeah, I mean, the problem with Corey Simon, right, is that he was good enough to stick around. Like, he stuck around for long enough, but you're right, the impact was definitely not what you'd expect given the guy's draft position.
Right, it was like, you know, he was in that horrible position with us where, you know, he was playing just good enough to say, okay, well, you know, next year is going to be his year, or he's turning the corner now.
Right.
And it never happened, never did. And another guy that actually was okay, but I really thought Jerry Stackhouse was going to be Kobe Bryant.
Oh, man.
I thought that Allen Iverson and Stackhouse was going to be basically Kobe Bryant and Jerry and Allen Iverson in the Sixers backcourt. And again, didn't exactly work out that way.
No, I mean, a talented guy for sure. And Mick, thanks for the phone call. But I'm with you. Like the stuff that he did at UNC, you know, the projections for what his career was supposed to look like. I'm with you, man. Jerry Stackhouse looked like that was going to be the dude. You know, it's interesting his description of Corey Simon doing enough, like, almost to keep you hooked, you know, where you have hope that the next breakout or the best part is right around the corner. I am deeply concerned that Derek Barnett is that way. I'm concerned that Derek Barnett keeps flashing and you're like, oh, if he's just able to stay healthy or if he's just able to do this or he's just able to do that. And then, you know, you're 7-8 years into the career and waiting for the light to turn on. That's a big one. Bill in Wynwood is next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on tonight, Bill?
Nice to speak with you, Joe. Joe, I have something after I say my past event.
Okay.
About the Sixers, if you don't mind.
Let it rip, yeah.
Okay, so here's what got me, Joe. I was at this game, and I must tell you, I was so depressed, I almost was unable to drive home. You remember the game when Magic took over at center?
Oh, geez.
And played the Sixers, and it was an absolute disaster.
It was a coming out party for him, but on the other side, it was like, come on, man. Brutal.
Oh, my goodness. It was so sad. So Joe, I got to ask you a question that's been crushing me for the last 3 weeks.
Okay.
And maybe I'm missing something in basketball with the Sixers. I don't think I am. I want to know what the hell Brett's thinking about with not playing Trey Burke instead of Neto. I don't even, it's not even close. You got a professional. Burke is a professional player. He can play on almost any NBA team. Neto is not a player of his level. Tell me what I'm missing or why is Brett missing?
The only thing that I can think of, Bill, two things, right? First, maybe the size is too much. Like, maybe the fact that Trey Burke is not of ideal guard size is too much for Brett.
He's bigger than Neto.
I don't think it's a good reason either. I'm with you 100%. Now, the other thing that I'm going to say here is that I don't know if he likes the way that Burke plays.
How can he not like it? I'm going to tell you something, Joe. I just want to tell you, I've watched him. I just for fun put on, I've taped all the DVR and all the games, and I've been watching Burke. He makes no mistakes. He holds the ball correctly. He does a lot of good things. He's got a professional. Instead, he's playing a guy that's a little out of control and can't do much for you. I don't understand it. I'm thinking he wants to trade Neto, so he's showing him out there?
I mean, it's possible, but they just got him. They just signed him, Bill, and thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate it. They did. Like, they just picked him up this year. And I know it's the same thing with Burke. I just don't get the impression that he likes Trey Burke that much. Fair or unfair, I think that's kind of clear. That he's not a big fan there. And where I thought our last caller was going to go was where, someone just came in on Twitter. Honestly, where was it? I want to give credit. Or is it gone? Oh my gosh, you should delete your tweet. This is such a good one. How about the Eagles this year? Right? Like, how about getting the first opportunity to, first of all, you have the disappointment of everybody's expecting between 11-5 and 13-3, not getting that, getting to host a playoff game anyway. It's the first crack that you're getting to see Carson Wentz in playoff football action, yo. And then 8 snaps in, it's done. And you come that close, by the way, to beating Seattle with Josh McCown at quarterback, who tore his hamstring off the bone in the first half. I mean, I think that we're too close to it now. But God forbid in the next 5 seasons or something like that, if the Eagles don't win a Super Bowl, I think that we can look at that game and be like, that is a big disappointment. The 2011 NLDS stunk, but it didn't sting quite so badly because we thought the window was open. Like, we thought, it's like, okay, that sucks that you're going to lose that to that team in that fashion, but it's the 4 aces period. You know, this is going to be the standard for what the Phillies do. And then we didn't realize that that was their last best shot until years afterwards, you know? Talking about after Hunter Pence and everything else, right? I do wonder how we'll view the loss to the Seahawks at home years in the future here. Dennis and Ben Salem is next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, Joe. How you doing, brother?
Awesome. How are you?
Good, man.
Good.
All right, so I've got 2 that broke my heart. Philly sports memories.
Okay.
One's not a big one. It's more of a personal thing. It's the 2010-2011 draft. And I'm sitting there, and I'm begging the Eagles, we just need one player. That's it, just one player. All you got to do is move up like 2 spots. You got him. You got, oh, he's still there. And they moved up. Yes. And I texted like everybody I knew, welcome to Philadelphia, Earl. Brandon who? we moved up, and Earl Thomas was there, and we passed and took Brandon Graham. I was ready to cry. Oh, it was horrible.
Now, that has worked out a little bit since then, but you had years of watching Earl Thomas being all pro safety.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Brutal.
And the one I'm shocked nobody's mentioned, I'm not a huge hockey guy. That's why you never hear from me when the Flyers play. I'm not big in hockey.
Gotcha.
2000, Atlantic Conference Championship, Scott Stevens, Game 7, destroys Eric Lindros.
Yep.
That was like one of the years I'm like, wait, this might be the year. I've watched a few games. I'm like, holy crap, we looked great. Holy, we might actually, oh God, what did he do? He killed that man.
That was the progression. That was literally the progression of everyone's feelings. Like, oh my God, what happened? No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked nobody has called it. Like, that one actually got me like, wow. That was possibly our best chance during the Lindros period to win it all. And there it went. Scott Stevens just killed a man on ice and nobody cares.
And Dennis, the problem too is that is an exclamation point on a career, because it's not like Lindros came back after that. That was it. Like,
yeah,
he tried to come back
and
just couldn't do anything.
Yeah, that was just, he was never the same after that. I mean, he had a couple before that, but that, I mean, that was the one that just, that was the nail in the coffin, for lack of better terms.
And the other problem, Dennis, good stuff, man. Thanks for the phone call. And Josh, you know this, hockey fan. You watched Scott Stevens do this to others, and you just always were aware of where he was on the ice, And the one guy who wasn't was Eric Lindros. And that was the one guy you couldn't have get hit. And he got hit.
And the shame is we didn't know as much as we now know about concussions. He probably should have never been out on the ice because he was crossing that blue line in slow motion. And you could just tell he wasn't functioning at full speed.
Nope. Nope. You do wonder how different things would be if all of the information were available then as we have now. Like, that is a big example, right? Is that he probably wouldn't be out there. But you're seeing guys' careers end at 22 and 23 and just been like, nah, you've been hit too many times. Like, that's too many.
Right, and I actually found out about the Lindros hit through the newspaper. It was one of the few big games I didn't actually get to watch because I was up in Tioga County, no cable. I threw a hissy fit missing it. My dad comes back with a newspaper. I'm at the edge of my seat. What happened in Game 7? He goes, sorry, sport, they lost. And he's like, by the way, that guy you really like? I was like, Lindros? He's like, yeah, he got hurt again. And the image on the front page of the sports section is the helmet going right over his eyes a little bit and him out cold.
Man, oh man. I mean, when you watch it, that was the opposite of the Wentz injury, right? The Wentz injury against Seattle. That happens in real time. You're like, that's not that bad. What in the world happened? And then you see it slowed down and you're like, okay, I see it was a dirty hit. I see exactly what happened. I understand. When the Lindros hit happens, there is no doubt whatsoever what the outcome is, what happened. What happens next? Like, there was no doubt at all. And that's what really stung as a Flyers fan. By the way, the Wentz versus Seattle was Joseph Giordano. Thank you for tweeting in, Joseph. Appreciate that. And Philly fan in Florida tweeting in, echoing a previous caller, Randall blowing out his knee game one in 1991. Yeah, that's when you're watching Randall just about at the height of his powers. And a Philly defense under Buddy Ryan that's just crazy. That could have been a big-time season. We have Lance who called in, said Clarence Weatherspoon. I assume that's a player that he was wrong on, or was that a disappointment?
One he was wrong on, I believe, is what he said.
Okay, he was saying he was wrong. That's a strong one. Clarence Weatherspoon. Big time. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Eric, Flyers junkie, comes back to Ron Hextall's defense. We got tweeter on tweeter action right now. Disagree on Hextall. Had a lot of bad contracts to deal with in a salary cap league, but he did get all of the youth they have on the current team and in the pipeline. Bad moves, length of Voracek deal, correct, and signing JVR made sense at the time, but is a bad move. Right? Like, based on what we've seen so far, you understood why it happened, has not worked out the way that they hoped.
Right, but none of these deals are to the level of a Briz, which I think is a little more Ed Snyder than it was Holmgren,
sure,
as far as the motivation
and
there.
And the mandate, yeah.
And Andrew McDonald is one of the all-time worst contracts. Before the extension actually came into effect, you already knew he wasn't a first-pair defenseman. He's a third-pair defenseman who is making first-pair defenseman money, and that's what absolutely kills you in a hard-cap league.
Stings. Stings big time. You're right. Flyers are actually in pretty decent shape now. You know, there are probably teams that are in slightly better shape or at least as good. But the Flyers were in one of the least desirable spots from the prospects pipeline and the salary cap. Not bad by Hextall. Not bad. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. The tweets coming in very well. So appreciate all of the contributions. Lindros is one that comes in from Corey Murphy. Avery Merrick tweets in, Flyers not winning the Stanley Cup in 2010. Phillies one and done in 2011. I don't know if I expected them to win the Stanley Cup in 2010. It's more the way that they lost it. That's what gets me.
Well, in 2010, I was there for the last game of the season where you're going into a shootout with the best goalie in the league in Henrik Lundqvist.
Right.
I didn't think they were even making the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So they make it. They go on their run. Like, I get that if you were disappointed because you talked yourselves into them, or yourself into them because, you know, you have series to do so to make it to the Stanley Cup. But I don't know. The Blackhawks are pretty good. And I mean, Patrick Kane obviously turned into Patrick Kane, who somehow got left off of the NHL all-decade team list, which is just like full-on offensive. I have no idea how that happened. But it's disappointing, but I wouldn't say that it was something that was like shocking to me that they didn't win the Stanley Cup. Then Mark Cyclone Jones at Cyclone Jones Esquire. Man. That Eagles-Tampa Bay NFC Championship game was a new low of disappointment for me. Here's why. That team stunk. That's one of the worst Super Bowl-winning teams that I can remember. And if you watch Two for the Money, which is a movie that I have seen, starring Matthew McConaughey and Al Pacino, he talks about why it's so painful for the Eagles. Talks about John Gruden with Tampa Bay having put together the Oakland Raiders team that he's playing in the Super Bowl and understanding intimately the strengths and weaknesses of the players, the coaches, et cetera, et cetera. He knew how to beat Oakland. If you got by that team, you were probably going to beat Oakland too. Oakland was, you don't want to call them an upstart. They had a really good season, but people didn't expect Rich Gannon to do what he did that year. The roster was older. You had a lot of, like Tim Brown, you had a lot of guys that were closer to the end of their career than the beginning. And the Eagles were one of the top teams there. That is a brutal, that's by far the worst. It is by far the worst of all of the losses. That's more painful than the Super Bowl loss, for sure. I know that sounds insane to say, but I think that if you polled Eagles fans, losing to the Patriots in the Super Bowl the way that they did stinks. There's nothing like Rondé Barber at the link.
Well, it's like comparing the Sixers losing to the Raptors last year compared to losing to the Lakers in the NBA Finals. You felt like maybe considering what happened to Golden State injury-wise, that how the Sixers match up with the Bucks, they would have got through, and it would have been almost a cupcake type of matchup in the Finals considering the situation compared to going up against two absolute Hall of Fame superstars in the Lakers.
And in both cases, the team that you lose to wins the whole thing. So, yes, that's a very apt comparison. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Oh, man, we didn't even bring this up. Jonathan comes in. The Eagles' dream team. I went to college in Florida, and the hype was so big. People were wearing Eagles gear on my campus. That was the only time I'd ever seen that in my 4 years there. Vince Young talking about the dream team, baby. Who else was a part of that? Cullen Jenkins. Was that, oh my gosh, who was the guy from Jacksonville, the pass rusher? Oh my gosh. The Mohawk dude. Oh, I can't remember. It's going to come to me. Don't tweet it at me. Don't tweet it to me because I see it pop up in real time. I want to figure it out. We had Cullen Jenkins on that team. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie on that team. Oh, Jason Babin, right? That's who it was. Jason Babin. Yeah, no. That team was a big-time disappointment. And it's because, well, I mean, it's the same reason why I'm angry at these Eagles. This current generation. I don't care if you get saddled with expectations and don't live up to them. That stinks, okay? And as far as I'm concerned, media members do as well as they can to kind of paint the picture of what a team's like and what they're going to be. But fans don't know, a lot of people don't know what a team's going to be like until the very end of the year. No way of knowing sometimes. But if you come out and say that you are like the dream team, or that this is the new norm in the middle of a Super Bowl parade, well, then you have to live up to the expectations that you set for yourself. That's the difference. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. It's Josh Rabick producing. This is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Back
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Final half hour of the program here. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Old Dominion over Nova, says Bizarro Miyagi. Man, what year was that? Where Old Dominion took down Nova. Oh, man. That's like the kind of win that you know, build a franchise on or a program. Man, there it is in overtime. 89, 81, and 1995. A 14-3 upset. Old Dominion taking down Nova. Brutal. Life's not fair sometimes. It really isn't. I'm okay with it to a point. And this is something that I don't know if many people share with me or not. There are some people that I've talked to that have been like, yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. And there's some people that say you're crazy. I love the unpredictability of sports. Like, I think it's super cool how things can just come out of nowhere and Cinderella stories and stuff like that. But there's something in me that gets, and this doesn't happen in 7-game series, but like in 1-game series and the Super Bowl, stuff like that, one-off kind of situations, Final Four, it doesn't feel right to me when somebody has been so dominant for an entire season, dominating, been way better than everybody else, and then momentary lapses here and there in one game mean the season's over. I think that that's tough sometimes. And when you're talking about those dominant teams, like, look, the Ravens are going to be fine. I don't have any, like, you know, crocodile tears for the Ravens. But how much does that suck? You earn the right for the bye. You sit around while the Titans continue to play playoff football like they have for the last 2 months. You come in, you're a little rusty, and before you know it, you're way behind the eight ball and you can't come back. That's brutal. That's the positive and the negative of sports all rolled into one kind of game there. So I don't know, I'm torn. I like the Cinderella story, but as somebody who also likes dominance, to see dominance upended, you know, in the blink of an eye is also one of the cruel edges of sports, let's say that. Did anyone bring up the Fog Bowl, says Paul Arch? Of course not, but that is a big-time one. That is one that when you talk to people who watched it, like, you literally watch them shake with how upset they are about the Fog Bowl. Completely, completely makes sense. Sixers, this is coming from XXJLoXX. The Sixers only getting an old Chris Webber to help AI win and just content with the money AI brought in. I don't know what their reasoning was, but it does really, really smart that they did not bring in anybody else besides Chris Webber, especially once it became apparent that the Webber thing was not going to work out at all. Forget the way that they hoped, but it wasn't going to work at all. That's one that you definitely want to send back. Return to sender. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Josh, I haven't asked you about this, and I meant to. The T.O., Donovan McNabb, the whole kerfuffle in real time. Did you pick a side in real time, and has that side changed in the 15 years since it all went down?
I think I was probably at that time more T.O. because I knew Donovan was there and you wanted to keep T.O. So in a way, you almost temporarily side with the component that was new to the team and you knew was almost an X factor. So I'd probably say I wanted to do everything in my power as a fan to encourage T.O. staying.
Okay. And now? Has that view changed of the situation?
Yeah, I'll say this. I think Donovan could have done stuff to definitely have endorsed T.O., and there is responsibility there. I don't think it's as black and white of, okay, it's one person's fault, but you did see extra stuff that happened with T.O. later down the line. And also knowing that they didn't get along, I know it's sports, you've got to be a professional, you got to get through it, but that does play a factor in it. When you hear all this stuff about Alshon Jeffrey and Carson Wentz, that plays into your mind when you're watching the game and you think about how somebody's playing for one of their teammates.
That's exactly right. I mean, you see, I would bet that more than scheme fit or coaching staff or anything like that, I would argue that that's probably the biggest motivator for player movement around the NBA is, number one, like, what opportunities can your new city afford you? But number two is, who are you playing with? Like, do you like the people that you're playing with? I mean, you see Anthony Davis teaming up with LeBron James, James Harden and Russell Westbrook getting together in Houston. Kawhi Leonard said specifically when the Clippers presented him with a list, who do we need to bring in order to get you here? He said, Paul George. And then they went and did it. I do think that that's a pretty significant factor in, like, players deciding where they want to go and determining in this era of player movement, how do you hone in and narrow down teams that you could see yourself being a part of the future with? Alan Brown tweeted in, easily, and this is the biggest sports disappointment for Alan, easily walking out of the vet after the loss to Tampa Bay. After the deuce touchdown, like 2 minutes in, I was sure we were going to the Super Bowl. Felt like walking out of a funeral when the game was over. That's one that I would bet the Eagles fans who were diehards during that time, so like young fans won't, that one really hit young fans right now. But when you were there, or you were watching, or you were following the team, then that's one that the Super Bowl can't fix. That's one that you probably will never get over, is the Tampa Bay loss. Last game at the vet, which is another factor. Like, you're obviously very fond of the vet and the history of the vet. Closing it down that way, that is, it, for the rest of time in the history books, that is always the way that the vet closed. That's something else that we're not going to be able to get over here. Man. T.O. and Donovan McNabb bringing up the negativity again brings it out in us. I am fully amazed, and it's a compliment to you guys who are listening and calling and tweeting in. I'm amazed that we've lasted this long in this way, and here's why. Because any time that we paint the picture here in Philadelphia when we're talking about our teams as anything other than sunshine and roses, it's always like, oh, here comes the Negadelphia again, and always focused on the negative and stuff like that. I've actually found this to be pretty therapeutic, to be completely honest with you, because we've approached it from a perspective of what has disappointed you in the past. And in a lot of cases, not all, but in a lot of cases, time has gone by and has kind of healed it a little bit. We've had some other things happen. We're different from when those things happen. But we've kind of, we've made it through some dark periods, as Jasper Lucas put it, Hall of Famers of busts and things like that. We've made it through, and the mood has not dropped all that much. I think that we've handled it okay. So that's a compliment to you guys and the way that we're able to share some of these painful experiences together without getting bogged down by them. Paul Arch 65 tweets in, biggest disappointment, the short Eagles career of Frank Gore. It's like he was never here. Paul, I like you. You're a good tweeter to the show. But if you ever tweet in about this and don't refer to him as Eagles legend Frank Gore, you and I are going to have some significant issues. Put some respect on that man's name. I don't know when the Wall of Honor thing is going to happen for Frank Gore, but you'd better be there to make up for this slight against my man, Frank Gore. Otherwise known as Eagles legend, Frank Gore. Super strange. That was one of the first things that led me to wonder if something was up with Chip. When Frank Gore says, yeah, Philly sounds cool, and then starts to do some of that explaining, or exploring rather, of what life is going to be like in Philadelphia, and he goes, nope, I'm good. Going to go check out some other options. Eagles really did have difficulty locking down running backs. Frank Gore, then Ryan Matthews, we're committed to you as our starting running back. Wait a minute, DeMarco Murray's available? All right, we're getting DeMarco. Ryan, do you still want to be here too? Because we'll let you go. Oh, what's that? You want to stay because we gave you starter money? All right, that's fine. What's that? Now we give DeMarco Murray a little bit less money than LeSean McCoy, but we also signed Ryan Matthews, and they're making like the same as LeSean McCoy. And now we have to tell our fans about how the reason we got rid of LeSean McCoy was because we don't want to have money tied up in the running back position. Is that what happened? All right, well, I just think culture beats scheme, guys. That's all. 610-632-0975. Final segment is coming your way next. Is the Joe Torty Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Final segment, Joe Torty Show, 97.5, The Fanatic. Taking a spin around the internet, making sure that I don't miss anything for one more thing. You know, I always like to bring you the coolest thing, the best thing that I find on the web for the day. That's coming up in 4 minutes' time. Josh Rabick is producing. Now, the interesting part of all of this is that despite the fact that we can easily name a lot of the failures in the last 20 years especially, but I know that there are people that are going further back than that, 30, 40, 50 years, when it comes to your biggest disappointments in Philly sports. We're in pretty good shape right now. I mean, think about it. The Eagles won the Super Bowl. Not that far away. I am still old enough to remember when the Phillies won the World Series. Got the Flyers in contention. The Sixers expected to be in contention. Look, all things considered, Philadelphia's been in way worse shape before. Talk about the Phillies being the losingest franchise all time in the history of history. You've got the Flyers who, as some people pointed out, it's kind of been a tough road identity-wise before and after the passing of Ed Snyder. You know, with the Sixers, you're going through like the tanking process and you're not really seeing them try to compete for anything. And then the Eagles had to answer the post-Donovan McNabb question of like who's going to be the quarterback, and the audition process was relatively short. Didn't really take all that much time. So as far as I'm concerned, things are looking way up when it comes to the Philadelphia sports scene. Let's close out with two more. Bob Moritz tweets in, Sixers losing 1968 Eastern Conference Finals to the Celtics. Can't speak to that one. No clue. Close second, Sixers losing 1981 Eastern Finals to the Celtics. Know enough to know that that one was painful. And then Matthew Farron tweets in, Reggie White signing with the Packers. That one hurts. Not every day, like Chuck Bednarik's probably the other one. Not every day that the Eagles have the best player maybe ever at a position. And he went and signed with the Packers. Having to watch him walk out the doors, tough pill to swallow for sure. Some really good stuff there. Fascinating to see what the disappointments are. And of course, my biggest disappointment was the Andrew Bynum signing not or trade not working out. The injuries to Bynum. The fact that you were kind of jettisoning the Andre Iguodala era of the Sixers, which was not an exciting era of Sixers basketball. I'll give you that 100%. But considering what Iguodala and company have done since then, like Iguodala has put together a borderline Hall of Fame career, and Andrew Bynum never suited up for the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm glad that we're able to put that behind us. The Embiid and Simmons era is here, and now who knows what happens with the rest of the crew. Hopefully they're able to right the ship, start picking up some wins on the road, withstand this tough stretch right before the All-Star break, and then get things rolling in the second half of the season as they continue probably to lurk around that 3-4 seed is where you're probably going to see them end up by the time everything's done. Great. We'll see if this team actually is built for the postseason or if all that's just, you know, a whole lot of talk. All right, here it is. It's time for the often imitated, never duplicated, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
Okay, this one comes to us from the world of sports. And this is coming from up north, Edmonton, the Edmonton Oilers, and all-star festivities here. I assume that Josh Rabik has been locked into this. Hunter, who is the Edmonton Oilers mascot, appeared on the NHL All-Star red carpet. And he's kind of like a bobcat, I guess is what I would describe him as. He appeared wearing kind of like a petticoat kind of situation. It's like a coat that's got tails. He's wearing an orange feather boa and a hat and no shirt. He's just got like the... what they're saying is that he may have watched Magic Mike too many times. I don't know what's going on with mascot violence. But first, it's Gritty, you know, getting involved with the law. And now I'm being assaulted through the eyeballs with parts that I don't need to know that mascots have in terms of pectorals and stomachs and things like this. I know this is an unpopular opinion, Josh Rabik, but I want to get your thoughts on it. I don't care if mascots go like the way of the dodo, like totally disappear. I'd be okay if mascots were not a part of big-time pro sports.
Yeah, and especially some of these mascots in hockey. I mean, we're talking about a lynx here that's doesn't look like something that kids are going to want to curl up to. And how often do you think of really the mascots interacting with the fans? When you see Gritty, I mean, it's a laughter type of thing. But remember what our first instinct was when we saw Gritty.
Yeah.
It was, oh, great. We don't need it. Like, that's ridiculous. And I'm sure that's probably what Edmonton fans thought of when they were revealed their new mascot and everything. It's something that should probably go by the wayside.
Now, here's how I feel about it. Minor league sports are a completely different story. It's supposed to be a fun family environment, affordable, that sort of thing, whatever. I'm just not sure how much... like the NHL, NBA, MLB, you know, I'm just not sure how much those organizations need mascots. I don't think so.
Well, in baseball, you can dance on top of the dugout between innings with the Philly Fanatic. It's sure. All fun, great during a nice summer night. in hockey, what's the big thing? Hey, we don't want you up moving around when the puck's in play. We need your head on a swivel and everything like that. So I just don't think that there's as much promotion to doing like this extended dance and celebration with the mascot, considering it's more of a sport that they want your head on a swivel, whereas what you're doing with the Philly Fanatic is happening usually between innings.
Yeah, that's true. Right. So they reduce mascots now in hockey to like in like media timeouts, and they come out with like the ice crew and stuff like that. I don't know. Is that necessary, I guess, is what I'm driving at. I don't know. I don't want to be anti-fun. I've been accused of being anti-fun, I would say correctly in the past. So I just want to make sure that I'm not misconstruing things here.
Yeah, going to a Flyers game, I want them to cut out the Justin Bieber music and some of the extra, you know, curricular stuff with Gritty, maybe tone that down a bit, and let's get back to some old school hockey.
And as long as he wears a shirt, right? Like, I just baseline, let's keep Gritty in a shirt.
Yeah, that guy needs to cover that stuff up.
As much as we can, yeah. Speaking as someone who does need to do that myself, I can recommend it as well. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in. My co-host for the evening, including Devon Givens, who shared the microphone with me for 2 hours. Really appreciate it, hanging out with all of you. Josh Rabick, outstanding job as per usual. Thank you, man.
You got it, dude.
I will be back on the airwaves on Monday, and I'll be on the television tomorrow for Penn Temple on NBC Sports Philadelphia, so that should be a good time. Quentin Rose against A.J. Broder should be a pretty exciting matchup. And then, Josh, when are you back in these hallowed halls here? You back tomorrow?
I'll be back here tomorrow producing Rob Motti at Parks at noon.
You are a machine. Thank you very much. And to everybody who called and tweeted in, I will talk to you next time. Until that time, this is Joe Torti saying so long. Thanks for listening. And I will see you probably tomorrow. Talk to you on Monday right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.